For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The euro and European banking shares have benefited in Monday trading after the first round of the French election. Voters will go to the polls again in 2 weeks for a runoff that pits pro-European, pro-globalisation centrist Emmanuel Macron against the far-right's Marine Le Pen. The two candidates have diametrically opposing visions of the future of France, as Elena Casas reports from Paris.
Snap polls conducted after Sunday's results show Emmanuel Macron winning the second round by at least 60% to 30%, but 2 weeks is a long time in politics. Le Pen will seek to portray him as an elitist former banker who doesn't understand ordinary people's lives, while he reminds the French of her party's racist and anti-Semitic past. When her father Jean-Marie reached the second round in 2002, 80% of the French voted to block his way to power, giving then-President Jacques Chirac a historic margin of victory. The mainstream left and right candidates have called on supporters to back Macron, but the FN is not as taboo as it once was, and the result is far from a foregone conclusion.
The world's first malaria vaccine will be trialled in 3 African countries, raising hopes of lowering a death toll of more than 400,000 people each year. So-called RTS-S is the first drug to pass the critical phase 3 stage and will now be tested more widely with children, as Dan Ashby reports from Dar es Salaam.
A malaria vaccine will next year go on trial in Kenya, Malawi and Ghana. So-called RTSS is the first drug to pass a critical World Health milestone. It's already been tested on more than 10,000 children, and a year after the vaccinations, there were half as many cases. Its long-term protection is less successful, but the World Health Organization says it could save tens of thousands of lives and marks a milestone in man's fight against one of the world's deadliest diseases.
Afghanistan's army chief and defense minister have resigned after a Taliban attack last week that some reports suggest killed over 100 soldiers. It happened on Friday at an army base near Mazar-i-Sharif. A 12-year-old boy who drove 1,300 kilometers across Australia's New South Wales on his own in the family car managed to evade suspicion, partly because he looks much older and is about 6 foot tall. Arthur Stevens reports.
The boy drove away from his family home at Kendal, around 400 kilometres north of Sydney. After leaving home last Friday morning, the boy topped up his fuel at a Cobar service station almost 900 kilometres away and drove off without paying for it on Saturday morning. He was eventually stopped by police 400 kilometres further west at Broken Hill when a highway patrol noticed the car's bumper bar dragging on the ground. The boy had been reported missing by his parents almost immediately after he left and say they're extremely relieved to see him home.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and a warm welcome to the programme. To you, dear listener, hope you're well. It's the 24th of April. It's Monday, the beginning of a brand new week of Richie Allen shows. Didn't I tell you that the St. George's Day parades around the, I won't say the UK, around England wouldn't get any coverage, or they would get scant coverage on the national media? Didn't I tell you that? Didn't I tell you that? And don't blame the Muslims. It has nothing to do with Muslims or political correctness or trying not to offend the Muslims. Overt displays of nationalism will not be covered on national media, lest people celebrate being English or Irish or Swedish or Finnish or God knows what. Thought I'd just point that out. I mentioned this on Sunday View yesterday. Let's crack on with the programme.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yes, davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, Alternate Current Radio, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk, Europe's most listened to independent radio show, your show. So tweet at Richie Allen Show right now. Tell me what you're thinking. Piers Corbyn, the meteorologist, the founder of Weather Action, and the brother of the Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, joins me this hour live for an extended conversation about lots of different things. Looking forward to that. Due on the programme last week, Piers, there was a little mishap. That's what we'll call it. Delighted he's back. He's with me. And I was going another way in the second hour, but because of a last-minute reschedule, Michael Rivero joins me live from Hawaii. Mike wasn't scheduled to be back on the programme for a couple of weeks, but he's bailed me out of the shite. So he has, at the last minute. Not for the first time. Michael Rivero, top man, joins me in the second hour. I was about to call Maria Heller, and I saw a status from Maria on Facebook. She said there's shenanigans going down at Casa Heller. Workmen and workwomen are outside banging on doors and kicking in windows. Some sort of renovation going on at Maria's house. So I said, well, we could do without the banging. So my next call was to my great friend Mike Rivero. Not that I favour anybody over anybody else, but Mike was due back real soon anyway. So he joins me this Monday. By all accounts, those who went to see David in Gothenburg on Saturday had a fantastic day. And thank you to the many of you who sent me messages saying, Richie, you're always asking us to tell you if we went to see David, to let you know that we did and to say hello and all of that. Many of you sending me messages yesterday. So thank you for that. He's on the way to Belgrade as we speak, is David. He's in Serbia this coming weekend. All the details can be found at theworldwidewakeup.com. Special mention to John Padgett. How are you, John? John was in the audience in Gothenburg, sent me a lovely picture right about the time that David gives a mention to the Richie Allen show. Lovely picture, John, and thanks for telling me. A great 10-hour show, he said, despite a very sore bottom at the end. Yeah, these theatres, wonderful and beautiful as they are, these older buildings, the seats are not the most comfortable, are they? But riveted, said John, many others as well. Thank you so much for that information. I'd like to hear about it. The French election, then the French election. Now, the BBC reporting, and I think Ollie Barrett mentioned at the very top of the news bulletin there, that European stock markets rose and the euro hit a five-month high after the first round of voting in the French presidential election, which took place yesterday. Centrist Emmanuel Macron topped the voting, going through to the final round with Marine Le Pen. So investors apparently had been saying that they were worried that the far-left candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon would have beaten Macron on Sunday. Investors said that would have screwed up the markets and all of that jazz. But the markets are up apparently. They're happy that Macron is in the final round with Le Pen. The pollsters are saying that he's going to win by a landslide. So that's what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes. Here's a couple of interesting perspectives on yesterday's result. First, from Renaud Girard. He writes for Le Figaro. You often see him on RT. Now, Renaud Figaro says the French people have rejected the establishment parties. That's what's gone on. Have a listen.
They have, yes, they have sent off all the old politicians, basically, to choose a very young man of 38 years old. A little bit like America did when they elected Barack Obama. He's even younger than Barack Obama. And because these socialists, or these right-wing people who have run the France for the last 40 years, did not manage it well. I mean, we have a debt of 2,000 billion euros, and one asks why, what kind of plague we had, what kind of tsunami, what kind of war, why we have this kind of huge debt. And we have also a huge unemployment rate. I mean, it's 10% in France, it's less in Britain, it's much less in Germany. So people want to try something else. And so they chose, if you like, outsiders. Marine Le Pen is, of course, an outsider because the Front National has never run the country. And Emmanuel Macron, yes, he was an advisor of President Hollande. Yes, he was a minister of economy, but he resigned, he didn't stay. And he's some kind of outsider because he's so young.
Renaud Girard says the French rejected the establishment. They chose outsiders. Are they outsiders, though, really? We'll come to that in a minute. What was interesting about that clip, and the reason I extracted that and played it for you there, is he said massive debt, massive unemployment, horrendous outlook for young men and women, no chance of owning property. If you follow that yellow brick road, it goes to France selling off her assets to pay its debts. So why cannot Renaud Girard and others join the bloody dots? Why can't they accept what the European Union has done to the living standards, to the quality of life of European men and women everywhere? Right? Join the bloody dots. So they declare that this guy is anti-establishment then, even though he's more establishment than any of the candidates in the election. And we will talk about Marine Le Pen in a minute. Now, Agnès Poirier is a well-known French journalist. She reports for British media from France, has been doing that for some years. Agnès Poirier. Been practicing the pronunciations well for about 3 minutes. Agnès Poirier. She said that both Le Pen and Macron are establishment. Both of them are, she said, talking to the BBC's Nikki Campbell earlier today.
They're saying these are the outsiders, these two, Marine Le Pen and Macron. I mean, she certainly is. And he may be an outsider and a different person, but it's a kind of Blairish politics, isn't it? So it's nothing new about his politics.
Yes, but what about her? She's also, both of them belongs to the establishment. Mm. It's just that, you know, he doesn't have a party. So in that way, he's an outsider. You know, he only started his movement 12 months ago. He's rather inexperienced as well. He was a minister of the economy for François Hollande. But, you know, that's pretty all. And he's rather young. He's going to turn 40 this year. So,
and his wife's 25 years older than he is.
Just no, not 25. You're pushing it. It's, I think, 19 or 20 years. Yes, she used to be his French teacher. And they fell in love when he was 16, but they waited, of course, before marrying when he reached his mid-20s, I think. Mm.
But he's worked for Sarkozy. He's worked for Hollande. So in a way, yes, he is an insider.
Isn't an insider, but she's very much an insider too. I mean, I think, you know, this talk about anti-establishment or establishment, you know, they are politicians. They are new in a way, or her coming from the extreme, making it mainstream is quite an achievement, and the same for him.
Yeah. Both of them belong to the establishment, she said. He doesn't have a party, so in that way he's an outsider, she said. But he worked as a minister for the economy, and he was an investment banker, Hollande employee, and he worked for the Rothschilds. I want you to hear what she said again. Both of them are establishment.
Both of them belongs to the establishment. Mm. It's just that, you know, he doesn't have a party. So in that way, he's an outsider. You know, he only started his movement 12 months ago. Mm. He's rather inexperienced as well. He was a minister of the economy for François Hollande. But, you know, that's pretty all.
This is the way things are going over the last few years. These guys coming out of nowhere. Where the hell did this guy come from? Never heard of him. Ring a bell, anybody? Barack Obama, Alexis Tsipras, centrists, right? Yanis Varoufakis. He's even got Lex Paulson working on his campaign. Now, Lex Paulson worked on Obama's election campaign. Here he is on Sky News today. You'll hear the presenter first.
He is very much pitching himself as an anti-establishment candidate, but this is a man who has been in politics for a while. He's a former banker. He is very much part of the establishment, is he not?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think in a way, if you look at Emmanuel Macron's story, he's been taking risks and diverging from what the safe establishment path would be. from when he was a teenager. I think Emmanuel Macron is a very, just like Barack Obama, who let's remember was also a graduate of Harvard Law School. The CV does not determine the man, and the fact is that Emmanuel Macron has taken unbelievable risks time and again in his career, and this is exactly what France needs: this dynamic and entrepreneurial spirit to change politics.
What do you think his France would look like?
Look, I think we're seeing a shift in French democracy from...
He can't answer that.
Down, ...very centralized, highly a bureaucratic...
Because his answer should be exactly the same as it is now.
...the bottom up. Paris is the largest city in the world to do participatory budgeting. I think that Emmanuel Macron is riding a wave of citizen desire for more participation in government, and I think that you're going to see a wave of civil society being involved in these elections that has never happened before in France. I think that we're living through a real inflection point in history.
What nonsense. He's straight out of the Obama, as I said, Tony Blair, even Bill Clinton, Alexis Tsipras playbook. These guys that came from nowhere, seemingly. And they all have very similar characteristics. They look a certain way. They sound a certain way. They say the same things. So that's Macron. Now, lest anybody think that this program, which never has and never will, endorse any politician. Let's talk about Marine Le Pen, who was a regional councillor in her early political life, has been a member of the European Parliament since 2004. She's made Time magazine's top 100 influential people a couple of times as well. She's a lawyer. Got to learn how to say that. If you come from my country, it's difficult. Lawyer. She's a lawyer. She's a lawyer. She's a lawyer. And I've been thinking about Le Pen, and I've said this on programmes in the past. I reckon Le Pen was brought in to change the image of the National Front, the image that the public had of the party when her dad was in power, Jean-Marie Le Pen. Soften it up, basically. Why? Why is that? I'll tell you why. Because to the elite, the National Front might be useful someday. The elite might want to throw a few crumbs to the disaffected electorate. People pissed off to the back teeth of the mendacity of politicians and parties. Just when people are about to turn their backs on the political system and the political establishment, the elite might want to give you, supplant in your brain the idea that you have chosen anarchy. That you have given them a kick in the balls by voting for Le Pen. So how did he do that? Change the image of the party. Get her saying populist things like Donald Trump. Very similar to Trump. I was looking at some of the Le Pen opinions on geopolitical events and happenings. Let me tell you what Marine Le Pen says about Israel. I myself don't understand the idea of continuing to develop the settlements. I consider it a political mistake and would like to make it clear in this context that we must have the right to criticise the policy of the state of Israel without being considered anti-Semitic. Sounds good, right? Sounds very good. But then, she said in the same speech, she said, after all, the National Front has always been Zionistic and has always defended Israel's right to exist. Very Trump-esque, right? Very Trump-esque. So what you're seeing in France is what you're seeing everywhere. The establishment doing what it's done since time immemorial, presenting you with your choice for the presidency. It couldn't give a one way or the other. Who you choose, that's if they let you choose. If the polls are not rigged, it couldn't give a damn. Mayor Amschel Rothschild said, and I paraphrase, couldn't care less who sits on the throne of England. Give me control of a nation's money supply. That's all I want. And I see all the tweets today. She's anti this, she's anti EU. That's what she says. Madness. Speaking of Trump, speaking of the hairdo, He spoke from a cabinet meeting this afternoon to criticise the UN Security Council for its inaction on Syria and North Korea. Here's Donald.
I encourage the Security Council to come together and take action to counter all of these many threats. On Syria, the Council failed again this month to respond to Syria's use of chemical weapons. A great disappointment. I was very disappointed by that. The status quo in North Korea is also unacceptable, and the Council must be prepared to impose additional and stronger sanctions on North Korean nuclear and ballistic missile programs. This is a real threat to the world, whether we want to talk about it or not. North Korea is a big world problem, and it's a problem we have to finally solve. People have put blindfolds on for decades, and now it's time to solve the problem.
Yeah, just more neocon rhetoric from Donald Trump. How different all of that sounds to the pre-election Donald Trump, eh? The anti-intervention Trump. The man who told Bill O'Reilly. In fact, I think he told O'Reilly in January, before he was inaugurated. He said something very powerful, but of course he didn't mean it. And that was, again to paraphrase, who are we to criticise Russia or anybody else for their history? Now he's saying we've got to deal with North Korea, got to deal with Iran, got to deal with Syria. It's all very familiar. 21 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and alternatecurrentradio.com. We'll be right back in 90 seconds.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Right, welcome back to the programme. Thank you for your tweets. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. David tweets, you've got to love Trump's flip-flop on Assange and WikiLeaks. Who really turned the tide in the election? Not Russia, says David. Hi to Mark. Richie, your statement that Trump will be shown Kennedy's Dallas trip footage seems like he's seen the highlights. Of course, I was joking when I said that, Mark. I really was. But others have said to me in the past that it's true that certain elements of the deep, deep, dark state and the security services do show would-be presidents or presidents-elect that footage. Have a look at this there, Donald. Before you enter the Oval Office. Hi to JP in Manchester. A number of countries the US has bombed in the past year. Pakistan, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Afghanistan. Yeah. That's right. Base Ninja. Thanks for the tweets. Putin's Russia meddling caused my water pump to die. I had a sort of a long drive yesterday. Ah, a bit of sarcasm. But Putin's Russia meddling caused my water pump to die, the bastard says, Base Ninja. Yes, it's blame Russia for whatever you want. season. Hi to Gail. Hi to Mary Ellen in New York. She says Le Pen is somewhat similar to Trump, but has a clearer head and not as reactive, says Mary Ellen. Hi to Luga. Hi to Jen in California. How you doing, Jen? Nice to know you're listening as well. Going to take some music. When we come back from that, we should have Piers Corbyn on the line. Looking forward to speaking with him on your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com and elsewhere. This is Bob Steger, by the way. Welcome to the show. Bob Seger and Old Time Rock and Roll on the Richie Allen Show. Piers Corbyn is there, just waiting for him to come online. Just been swapping text messages with him. We'll get him on the programme in a minute. Emails are being sent to me by you. I know they are, but I'm having a problem with the server. And I'm not getting emails at the moment because there's an issue. And this has been an issue that has been... It's one of those things that drives you absolutely mad. It's been an issue for weeks now. I'm hoping to have it sorted out in the next day or two, and then I'll be able to open the many emails I've received over the last couple of weeks, but I've not been able to respond to. So bear with me. In the meantime, if there's something you want to say on the programme, just go to Twitter. It's Richie Allen Show on Twitter. To see what other people are tweeting to me, it's Richie Allen Show, all one word. That's Richie Allen Show, all one word. Simple as that. Press enter and you'll see then what others are tweeting to me, what others are saying to me. How about that? All good. Then you can interact with people. You can disagree, you can agree, and you can chat away to your heart's content about the programme and the subjects discussed on it. I'm glad that our next guest is back on the programme. He's no stranger to you. He's been on with me several times before talking about climate change and politics. He's the founder of Weather Action. Go to weatheraction.org. He is a widely, it must be said, widely respected meteorologist. Let's welcome back to the show our friend Piers Corbyn. Piers, welcome back. And you should be there. Maybe you've not got your microphone turned on, or maybe you've got it muted, maybe. Have a look at that. Good evening, Piers. We're connected, but yet we can't hear him. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give him a second to sort that out. While we do that, got some music on standby, because I'm very professional. Very professional, that guy. He's not very good, but he's very professional. This is the Bee Gees at exactly half past the hour. It's a song called Alone, ironically. Back in a minute with Piers Corbyn. Stay on me.
mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2. Available now at
premilonpictures.co.uk. Right, welcome back to the programme. I think we've sorted the technical issues and we can say that Piers Corbyn is definitely on the line. Piers,
can you hear me?
Loud and clear. How are you?
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, sorry. I blame the Russians.
You're just a mad professor, Piers. That's what it is.
No. By the way, on weatheraction.com, I think you said org.
Oh, I did. My apologies. Weatheraction.com. I'll tweet that out now and put it out on Facebook to our listeners. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, actually.
You're in good form.
Yes. I've been chatting with the Russians about what's happening next on the Sun.
Fantastic. We will, of course, get time to talk about climate change. And we will make time to talk about the Mayor of London linking pollution in the City of London to climate change. both of us probably agree that pollution is a serious issue and needs addressing, but to link it to climate change, well, that's a different thing. We'll come to that. You know that there's no low blows with me, there's no hidden agenda. We've spoken many times before, but I'm going to get a couple of questions out of the way very quickly. Has the Labour Party been in touch with you at any time? Not about this programme, and we're not that important, but have they been in touch with you at all to ask you to temper your appearances on radio about climate change and stuff like that? Or are you left basically do whatever you want to do?
No, I'm left to do what I want. I'm in touch with my brother quite often. He knows what I think. I mean, there's certain things I wouldn't talk about, but they're not about climate change, you know, as other things that really are not my business.
Traditionally, on climate change, we will leave it and come back to it a bit later. Traditionally, Jeremy has empathised, let's put it that way, with your position on climate change. As far as I understand it, I've been following politics for many, many years. And I believe Jeremy has empathy with the idea that man-made climate change through CO2 production is a hoax. Am I right in saying that?
Well, he's the leader of the party, so he has to follow Labour Party policy. But he does listen to everything, including things that I say. And I would hazard a guess that in the current period, it's becoming more obvious to everybody in the Labour Party that it's not as simple as they thought, i.e. it's the argument that it's all to do with CO2 is now not supported by the President of the United States nor by the President of the of Russia, who's recently said that it's there's natural process and it's not man-made. So I think the whole shooting match of man-made climate change will fall, and these various green policies, which are pursued by a number of parties, Labour, Lib Dems and so forth, will essentially fall by the wayside. Although certain good green policies will carry on, I hope, such as reducing real pollution, i.e. pollution from diesel traffic or smoke from anything at all.
Plastic in the oceans, that sort of thing, which is really
important. Yes, absolutely, But plastic in the oceans is nothing to do with climate
whatsoever. No, it doesn't.
Although the green people will say it is. Look, it's nothing to do with it, but it should be cleared up. That's just another issue.
Well, some of our listeners will be listening to you there now, and they will be, I'm going to say, sad and disappointed by something you said a second ago. And I'm not going to take you on this.
Which because, was what?
No. You said that Jeremy might have an idea on this or an idea on that, but he'd have to be careful with what he says because of Labour Party policy.
Well, if they've passed a policy at the last conference saying something, then he has to go along with that, or else argue against it quite strongly and get that changed. So, but he's an open-minded sort of person that believes in debate. I think the important thing about the Climate Change Act in Britain is that, although it's a complete poppycock as an idea, it does contain in it a clause which says, as the science changes, our measures, whatever they may be, will change. And of course, the science has changed in the sense that all the expectations of the warmists have failed, i.e. we've got more snow, not no snow. We've got not more hurricanes in America, but less hurricanes. And the jet stream is a long way south, whereas their own models would say it should be in the north and reasonably well behaved.
Right, let's leave climate change for a minute.
Okay.
The Sunday Telegraph article was excellent. I phoned you up about it on Sunday. Yeah. Sunday morning, I got you out of bed on Sunday morning. And
No, I didn't.
You were up. I'm only joking. You were up. You were up before me, probably. And by the way, I wasn't being rude or I wasn't being cheeky saying Piers is a mad professor at all. I've had a tweet from somebody who said you shouldn't categorise Piers that he's not a mad professor at all. I was joking. We can joke with one another these days. Now, people have been getting in touch with me and they've said the Telegraph interview with Piers was excellent. He shot from the hip. He called it the way it is, talking about the BBC, talking about the bias of the establishment. Piers has other views on freedom of speech, on other issues and certain things which we might come to in this conversation. Some people have said, and I'm not making this up, this isn't Sky News where we make things up. Some people have said to me, the wrong Corbyn is leading the Labour Party. That's not a joke now. Because what we see with the BBC behaviour around these issues, around Syria, around Russia, around peace in the Middle East, is we see the establishment agenda rolled out programme to programme, presenter to presenter. And you called it out, shooting from the hip, didn't pull any punches. To the credit of the Telegraph, they reported what you said, didn't put any spin on it. Now, we know that your brother holds these same opinions. We know that he was given a massive mandate by hundreds of thousands of Labour supporters twice. Why isn't he saying the things that he used to say before he took the position? Over to you.
Well, I think he does. I mean, when he's interviewed on the BBC, he's very clear. I mean, perhaps he won't use the phrase, like I said, they were BBC's evil, but he might say that they're not good and they're dishonest. I mean, I was surprised that the Telegraph did quote as much as they did from me, but I don't know what their motive is exactly. Maybe to show that I'm an oddball and therefore imply Jeremy might be. But I mean, he's not. He's very strictly backing, all the things which he said he would be backing. And I pointed out on that interview, for example, that the BBC was provenly dishonest on the question of Orgreave over the miners, Hillsborough, stadium, Jimmy Savile, and hiding of paedophiles, as well as, of course, on climate change, although we didn't actually talk about that much at all with the Telegraph. They were more interested in trying to get me to talk about other things which I was refused to be drawn on.
Well, to their credit, they printed it. They didn't.
Yeah,
put
it's,
any,
good. It's
they,
good.
They didn't put any slant on it.
No,
anybody reading it.
It was an accurate report.
It was an accurate report, as you said to me when we spoke over the weekend. Now, George Galloway was on this programme 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And he said to us, before he said to anybody, we happened to just have him on. And he spoke in glowing terms about Jeremy Corbyn. Yeah. But he seemed to be talking about the old Jeremy Corbyn. And he was pretty put out by what he saw as Jeremy bowing down to Zionism. When we go back to the interview Jeremy did with Andrew Marr. Now, I'm going to put my cards on the table before any listeners start losing track of where I am. And they think I'm trying to do a hatchet job. I am not. I like Jeremy Corbyn, the man. I like many of the things that Jeremy Corbyn has said from the backbenches for many, many years. I'm not a hypocrite. I don't vote. I don't believe we live in a democracy. I don't believe we can change things through the ballot box. But I like individual people for the individual things they've done over the years. Now, Galloway basically said to me, and I've not taken the audio out because I don't want to play it again. There's no need to. He said, I'm done with Jeremy. Because he said he threw Ken Livingstone under the bus. Why are we bowing down to Zionists when we criticise the policies of the Israeli government? Nobody's criticised Israel more than Jeremy over the years for their apartheid policies towards the Palestinians. But he went on the Andrew Marr show and he was almost apologetic for it. We'll root it out where we find it. We'll deal with it. Piers, why isn't he more like Piers Corbyn? Why is he not saying to Andrew Marr, I'm not going to listen to that nonsense. I'm not going to be accused or have my party members be accused of anti-Semitism just because they're asking uncomfortable questions of a criminal regime, to use the word they use about Syria all the time. He's fallen short there, Piers, hasn't he?
Well, I don't think so. Because, you see, these issues of any bias against anybody, you know, anti-Semitism or anti-anything, are subject to various committees in the Labour Party. And they've said, oh, yes, we can't have anti-Semitism. And that is true. We can't have anti-Semitism. So where it appears, then it has to be dealt with, if indeed it does appear. Now, of course, I think all these claims of it appearing are grossly exaggerated. And I know many Jewish people in the party who rage and say, look, there's nothing at all going on and it's all made up. But, yeah, you know, I mean...
Could Jeremy have said that, Piers? Could Jeremy have said to Andrew Marr, what anti-Semitism?
Well, I don't know about all made up. I mean, I've heard some Jewish people in the party say that. Now, there could be some anti-Semitism among certain individuals anywhere, as there is, you know, anti-black or anti-Irish even, you know, whatever. So those type of biases have to be dealt with, and there's a process in the Labour Party to deal with them, which Jeremy as the leader has to go along with. Now, the details of Ken Livingstone, I frankly don't know all about what's going on, but I would say that Ken has provided tremendous leadership on a huge number of issues, and that those should be recognised.
The reason I'm going to stay with Israel just for a minute is... Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted that you're on and that you're talking frankly about it. And your opinions are yours, and you're not Jeremy, and Jeremy's not you, and I have no axe to grind.
I'm totally against anti-Semitism, and it's completely crazy to suggest that Jeremy or me or anybody in our family is anywhere that way inclined. I mean, I've employed Jewish people. I've appeared on joint platforms with Richard Lindzen, who's a very well-known international meteorologist based in America, who's also Jewish. I mean, there's just no basis of it whatsoever.
There's absolutely no basis for it whatsoever. I know the Daily Mail tried to do a hatchet job on you a few weeks ago. You were attending an event. I think.
Oh, that was such nonsense.
I think Nick Collerstrom was there. Nick has been on this programme before.
In a meeting where somebody who they described as a Holocaust denier or something was also present. Well, you know, I mean, when I get on the bus, I don't check around on the bus and find out if there's any Holocaust deniers or whatever deniers.
No, of course not.
You know, and me being on the bus at the same time doesn't mean I'd agree with them. And just like if I'm in a meeting with the guy they mentioned, it doesn't mean I agree with him. He just came to the same meeting.
100%. Listen, I've followed your family and what you've been involved in for years and years, and you've campaigned for human rights for everybody, irrespective of their race, colour, creed, whatever. I totally endorse that. Do you understand why some people who were absolutely overjoyed when Jeremy got in to lead the party, why they're disillusioned now around not just issues like that, but issues around Syria and other things? And they say to me when they come on this programme, when we do phone-ins, they say, Richie, why doesn't he tell the absolute truth naked, you know, for everybody to see and hear in the time that he has in the spotlight, this backbencher, this champion of human rights, this anti-globalist, this anti-European Union man. They say that to me. Why did he change his mind on the European Union? Jeremy has been anti-centralisation of power for decades.
Look, I think on all these war questions, Jeremy is very clear. He doesn't agree with with bombing. He doesn't agree with what the Americans have been.
No, he doesn't, no.
And he's been very, very clear about that. On the issue of the European Union, I think you have to remember that him and Tony Benn stood against all those measures to build the European Union.
That's right, Maastricht and everything.
And
that's right, 100%.
You have to ask a question. Jeremy voted very clearly against Maastricht and Lisbon treaties, which were weakening the strength of British law and so forth. Well, Theresa May voted for those measures, right? So how you can believe that Theresa May is going to go ahead and fight for Brexit, I don't know. Look, in fact, I think this election is about undermining Brexit, and she wants to get rid of some of her Brexit MPs and hopefully get more of the Remainers in there, whether or not she increases.
Let's talk about that.
If she's defeated, of course, that's the end of that, and that's what we want, and that's what I believe will happen.
Let's talk about that then. Just before we do talk about that, I can't let that go. Jeremy Corbyn is not in favour of the centralisation of power through the European Union. Why did he support the Remain camp in the referendum then, Piers? That has disillusioned so many people. Why did he do that?
Well, to be fair, there are left and right arguments both ways. In terms of the left, there is a left argument to leave the European Union because it's a big capitalist, globalist exploitation machine, and there's a left argument to stay in there to unite workers on a wider scale across Europe to oppose the globalists, you see. So, I mean, the Labour Party goes along with that view, so obviously the leader goes along with that view, even though he's very, and there is a case to be said on that, you know. So that's what happened. But his criticisms of the European Union as an entity completely remain. And now he's the party's now saying, well, it has to go with Brexit because that's what the people say. And of course I think that a lot of people in the party are actually very comfortable with that, and maybe they weren't that comfortable with the Remain vote originally in the conference.
I'm going to argue with you, Piers. Let me just put an argument against that. I think this is why people have become so disillusioned with politics. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, without ever having met him, ever, that Jeremy Corbyn is a decent bloke. He's a principled bloke. He's, for me, the major issues of the world geopolitically, Jeremy's been on the right side of them.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt.
All the time.
No
and
doubt.
This isn't the European Union.
But let me finish the point now. Let me finish
we go
the point.
Through it is
well, this is the problem. You see, this is why people
matter.
This is why people are so disillusioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because people look at Jeremy and they say, why didn't Jeremy Corbyn make a speech at Westminster last year and say, listen, I'm the leader of the Labour Party. But the fact is, we're an open and a democratic institution. I, Jeremy Corbyn, myself, I will be voting to leave the European Union. And he could outline his reasons. Then he could say, but I'm not going to whip the party. Some of my colleagues on the opposition benches, they might very well want to vote to remain in. But I, as the leader of the Labour Party, I am in principle opposed to the institution that is the European Union for all the reasons that he outlined for so many years. And this is why people are disillusioned, Piers. And this is why people think there's no chance we can ever vote our way out of this crazy paradigm. When principled men...
Well, we have voted our way out of it.
When? When, though? No, sorry, I mean in general.
In general? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the paradigm that we live in, the paradigm money goes uphill, the banksters rule the world. People look at Germany...
Capitalist democracy won't go just by a single vote. In fact, it requires more than just votes. It requires actions of all sorts.
And shouldn't he have been using the time that he has in the spotlight to talk about those issues? To say, why didn't Jeremy say, listen, I've had this massive mandate from hundreds of thousands of Labour supporters, and yet I'm finding it impossible to implement what I was given a mandate to implement, or at least to talk about by the voters, because of the tyranny of the Zionist Blairites in the party and everything else. Why hasn't he said that, Piers? And then I'm going to leave it, because I don't want to be badgering you about this, because I want to talk about other things as well. Why didn't he do that? People are... this is what people say to us. They say, I'm giving up. I'm not voting anymore. I trusted Jeremy. And I still think he's a good man, but he's just not doing what I thought he would.
They should join the party, get in there and argue these issues in the party branches. Because, you know, the leader, however much support he has or however strongly he feels things, in the end, he has to speak for the majority and the branches and so on decide those things. So it's true, he could possibly say all sorts of stuff, but it might be ill-advised until he's got a lot of resolutions in branches saying that. Now, the Blairites, as we call them, are, I think, more interested in, well, they don't want Labour to win under Jeremy. They've basically said so, which, of course, is a ridiculous position. They are working for the globalists, and we all know that. But the way to defeat them isn't by not doing anything with the Labour Party. It's by joining the party and getting people in the right positions.
Let me make one final comment on that.
Outside, in all sorts of ways.
Let me make one final comment, and that's the honest to God truth. I'll make one final comment on it, because I've made my position clear and you've made yours clear. And I don't tell anybody what they should or shouldn't do. I just say, this is what I do. On that, we have the spectre of a disgusting, monstrous, maniacal war criminal like Tony Blair, belittling Jeremy Corbyn at any opportunity. Where's Jeremy coming out and, in that soft, thoughtful voice of his, saying to the likes of Andrew Marr, Andrew, are you seriously going to ask me to pass comment on a man who should have went to The Hague 15 years ago and who probably should be in prison for the rest of his life? I mean, I'd love, I said this on Sunday View yesterday, I'd love Jeremy to look at one of these guys and say, I mean, Andrew Marr was trying to badger him yesterday about nuclear weapons. And I thought Jeremy did very well. I thought he did very well saying, when we strike at the ISIS leader extrajudiciously, we end up killing a whole load of innocent people. We should be decommissioning nuclear weapons, not building more. And this is all good, and he's absolutely right. But why didn't he attack Andrew Marr and say, you were the guy, you and Paxman and all the other lawyers, evil as you called them on Sunday, you were the lawyers who told us that Saddam was killing his own people with chemical weapons. It turned out that he wasn't. That's the Corbyn that people want to see, Piers.
Yeah, but he said that many times, and I'm sure he'll say that again. You know.
But will it be too late? Will he be gone? Will he be on the back benches then?
We were led into that war by lies. No, on this general election, I think he can win and will win when people realise that it's really just a little trick or a big trick by Theresa May, because she's been threatened with 26 of her MPs being arrested or decommissioned or whatever happens to them when her majority's 18. So that's one of her problems. The other is, I think she actually wants to betray Brexit she'll get rid of some of her Brexiteers in this election, whether a majority goes up or down. And we hope it to go to negative, of course.
So you believe, Piers,
banking on trying to increase her support in Parliament and having more wriggle room type of MPs. And, you know, then come back from Brussels with fait accomplis of various sorts, which give the globalist exploiters and those who want to lower living standards continually in Britain, gives them a stronger arm. Because she is a Remainist at heart, you know. How did she vote on the Maastricht Treaty and the Lisbon Treaty? She voted, Jeremy voted against them. And those were absolutely fundamental building blocks of where we're at now. If you remember, Gordon Brown said to the public, oh, yes, we'll have a referendum on these, or one of them. And then he read it and thought, my God, he can't have a referendum on that because people will vote no. So he said it was a tidying up operation. Well, it wasn't a tidying up operation. It was a straitjacketing operation of British democracy.
I mean, you yourself, Piers, you're a very experienced man. You're a former councillor. We're going to move away from Jeremy now. And listen, if it
comes... I think anyone's listening, I don't think these criticisms of him are entirely fair. I mean, as leader, he has to act very responsibly and reasonably, and he does. And the Labour Party is a broad church. And you remember, there are people in there who seriously believe all sorts of things, and he has to respect them. And in terms of leaving the European Union, it's absolutely right that we have to safeguard interests of certain people, such as European Union members nationals who are working in Britain. I mean, they have to carry on being able to work.
Absolutely,
in Britain. And vice versa.
But that's a given, isn't it, Piers?
It's a given, Peter. Given, but you see, Theresa May's trying to use them as some bargaining chip. Well, that's just wrong. You know, there's a whole lot of other things about whether or not the car work manufacturers are going to be able to get the pieces they make in France to assemble in the north of England. Well, those things have to be sorted. But I hope his National Investment Bank can sort those things. If European Union won't play ball, we have to say, well, OK, we're going to make these parts in Britain ourselves then, you know, and just sort it and defend British industry.
Absolutely right. But listen, most people voted along the lines of immigration. And those people, in my opinion, weren't little England racists. They weren't. Not all of them. They see how unfettered immigration affects public services.
Yeah.
And they want to address that. And in fact, when I was listening to radio phone-in shows on commercial radio stations, most people were pretty moderate, pretty sensible. They were saying things like, well, of course, when we have positions to fill, we definitely need a workforce, no doubt about that. But at the time, we have to protect public services here. Now,
yeah.
I'm not talking about Jeremy, because I believe Jeremy is either conflicted or he's not telling us what he really thinks about the European Union. But the Labour Party. So the Labour Party say, well, we have to have access to the single market. But that comes, the only way you're going to get access to the single market is with the Schengen border arrangement again, with open doors immigration. And that's madness, that, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, it is madness, but we're not part of the Schengen agreement, although we do have to. Anyone who's in Europe is able to come here. The Schengen is about, you know, you can pass from France to Germany without a passport.
That's right. Yeah.
So we have.
We're not part of that. Cause we're not mainland Europe. That's right.
I think that our borders have to be our borders, and I think everyone actually agrees that that is the case. We have to have proper, secure borders. Now the issue is who goes either way and what, because if you don't have a check to the borders, you could have people smuggling through children for sex abuse and all sorts of stuff, right? You've got to have a proper border. That's the first thing, and that applies to the whole of the United Kingdom. Second thing is who comes in and out. Well, certain people have rights and certain people don't. The idea of free movement necessarily being part of the single market, I think, is nonsense, because we have plenty of trading agreements with all sorts of countries, such as China or Russia, but it doesn't mean that all Chinese or Russians can walk through the door. They have to get a visa, right? So you know, the idea to connect them is wrong. And also, when people do come here through the essentially open door at present to the European Union, then the issue of what they're paid has to be addressed, you see, because people can come here and offer to be employed at very low rates, which undercuts British wages. Well, we have to have proper checking if everybody comes through trade union operations or whatever, to make sure they're all paid at least the minimum wage for a start. You know, so then British living standards are defended.
Piers Corbyn is on the line. Go to weatheraction.com. Check out Piers' excellent work on climate change.
And buy some forecasts.
They're
going very cheaply now. We can do in 5 months ahead. You can get up to August.
Well, you know, the last time you were on, you gave me an outlook for about 4 months, and it was pretty spot on, it must be said.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I'm not just saying that. No, it was.
Well, no, it was. Of course it was.
It was on my list of things to mention.
The cold glass we're having now are really, really spot on from what we said, you know.
Yeah, that's right. We're
pleased about that.
Well, check out weatheraction.com. Piers is on the line. We're going to stay with Piers another 10 minutes or thereabouts. Thanks for the tweets. Loads and loads of tweets on this. At Richie Allen Show is the Twitter handle. The email, you can email me, but I'm not getting all the emails at present. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk. What's going to happen then in this election? Why do you think it was called? People were saying the election was called because of the polls, because the polls said that Labour were so far behind. But I think you touched on something earlier on. I think you're on the right lines. The election is all about trying to repeal or trying to slow down the process of Brexit. So the Lib Dems are saying today that they've signed up 100,000 members in the last few days. They say that this affected Labour voters, this affected Tories, this affected UKIPers. But this affected Labour and Tory voters who want to stay in the European Union might throw a vote to the Lib Dems. Could we see after this election that the Conservatives have less of a majority than they had in 2015, or even the Conservatives not have a majority, be 10 or 12 seats shy of a majority, opening up the possibility that the Lib Dems might do a coalition deal with the Conservatives? But the Lib Dems would do that with a caveat, namely that, you know, there has to be access to the single market, there has to be a watered-down Brexit. How do you see this unfolding, Piers?
Well, I think, first of all, the polls are a creation, largely, of leading questions, and they choose who they ask the questions of. So don't believe the polls. And already, the authors of those polls have suddenly said the Tory supposed lead is halved in a space of, what, 3 or 4 days? Well, you know, Jeremy was 201 to against when he was standing to be leader of the party and still won. So, look, Jeremy Corbyn can win the premiership of this country in 6.5 weeks' time. The idea that the Lib Dems have been recruiting people, well, they may well have been recruiting people, but look, the Lib Dems are the party of liars. I mean, they promised many, many things, said they were going to go into coalition with the Tories in order
tuition
to achieve
fees.
Those.
Tuition fees.
But they
fees,
didn't
yeah.
achieve those things. Yeah, tuition fees. I mean, whereas Labour will get rid of tuition fees. Labour will bring four more holidays, at the various National Saints Days around the whole of the United Kingdom. Labour will absolutely defend the NHS, whereas the Tory agenda is privatised, and the Lib Dem agenda, well, I don't know. It depends on the day of the week what their agenda on that is, but I suspect they'd go along with globalisation and privatisation.
Jeremy Corbyn has always said that the NHS should be free at the point of use, and that it should never be privatised. And he's always stuck to those principles, and for that, I would applaud him. But he's surrounded by globalist Blairite. I'm not going to use bad language on this programme.
Well, he is. He's got a lot of them around, and they're...
Who, given the chance, would sell off the NHS.
You've got to vote for him now to get into 10 Downing Street. That's what you've got to do. Would he agree to sell off any of the NHS? No, he would not. We can see now that the Tony Blair's, partial selling off, well, selling off in terms of PFI, was a complete, utter monstrosity. And now the NHS is saddled with paying these vast bills to the, you know, bankers, private bankers.
Private bankers, exactly. Another issue that we could go into, but we don't have all the time in the world. It's great to have Piers Corbyn on. weatheraction.com is the website. Subscribe on there. When Piers comes back in the future, we'll talk a lot more about climate change. Talk to us about Sadiq Khan then and air quality in London. I spent some time in London working at a TV project with a friend of yours who I sent an email to today, Mark Windows. Mark might be listening.
Oh,
good evening, Mark, if you're listening. I know how bad the quality of air can be in London. However, I don't believe it's got anything to do with changing the climate of our planet irrevocably or irretrievably. Where is this climate change thing going, Piers? I think we briefly touched on in the past the idea that climate change might be enshrined somehow in law, and that to deny it might become untenable. Untenable. I feel that they're linking it to everything. No matter what happens, they're linking it to climate change. What do you make of what you're hearing in the news?
Well, yeah, but the theory or the idea of man-made climate change is the religion of globalism, because it justifies anything they want. But very specifically, it justifies closing down industries anywhere you find them, and you might open them up somewhere else where they produce just as much CO2, but you don't tell the workers involved that that's what's happening. And it was under the guise of climate change that the northeast of England was closed down. And similarly, the Rust Belt of the USA. I mean, they're very similar type of places suffering globalization the same way. And the answer has to be to bring jobs back into those countries, pay people around the world properly, and resist the attempts by globalists to basically enslave the third world into production of material goods at extremely low rates. I mean, this is what globalization is about, and we have to oppose it totally. Now, what is going to happen with man-made climate change? Well, people are seeing through it. First of all, it's untrue in terms of the claims, because the world is getting colder. Once you get over the fraudulent data we're presented with, but people can experience these cold blasts which they didn't experience before. Secondly, that Trump and Putin are both against the idea of man-made climate change and the globalization associated with it. So it's only a matter of time, I think, before others have to follow. You see, the G20 and G7 didn't put out pro-climate change statements because Trump was insisting they can't, you know. So things are being rolled back. Is very good, and hopefully we'll get back to evidence-based science being the principle upon which we operate.
I'm going to say one final thing about politics, and you can punch me in the face next time you see me. I'll buy you a pint. This is not about Jeremy. Listen,
but that is the absolute truth. This is the last chance that young people, middle people, old people have got to stop the monstrous attacks on living standards now happening. It's the one chance, and that is you go out and vote for Labour and Jeremy Corbyn.
I'm going to say this everywhere. Right. I'm going to say this.
Even if they're Blairites in places, because they're going to be a vote in Parliament. That's what's
counting. And the irony of that is Blair is telling people
irony,
not to vote
but
for it. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, no, listen.
Let
me get that last point in, and you're going to get the final word, by the way. You are getting the final word. Listen, I haven't voted in a general election since the Irish election of 2002.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Now, I will go to the ballot box the day a man or a woman stands in the public spotlight and says four things. And I'm going to be very, very quick with these. Number one, our intelligence agencies invent terror groups in countries like Syria and elsewhere to destroy those countries in order that we can then provide the solution and go in, replace the democratic government with a dictator of our choice and steal all the resources in those countries. That's number one. The day a man or woman looks...
That's true. Yes, ISIS, John McCain, there you are.
There you go. Number two, when a politician says, we can no longer tolerate Israeli agents working through our parties, through the Conservative Friends of Israel, through the Labour Friends of Israel. We have politicians who swear allegiance, as they do in America, to the State of Israel. That's no longer tolerable. And number three, and finally number three, when a man or woman stands in front of a television camera at Westminster and says, the idea that we borrow money from central banks is abhorrent. These banks lend money into existence. We will create money. We won't use quantitative easing, but we will create money as we see fit for building houses in this country and building public services. That's how we will do it. We won't borrow money at interest from criminal Rothschild banks or Rockefeller banks anymore. The day a man or woman stands on television and says that, Piers, I will vote for them. And here's my
I agree with all of those.
I know you do.
I'm sure Jeremy agrees with
well. This
I
is mean, it, you see.
About banks.
This is it. Hallelujah. This is the cheap point I was going to make. Your brother believes all of that, and yet he won't say it on television. You've the final word.
Well, I don't know when he's going to say various things on television, but the point about undermining various countries, absolutely right. And ISIS, the creation of, with the support of John McCain and various forces in America, is one case. the question of Israeli agents in a number of parties, political parties, that was exposed on television, and that is completely wrong. I mean, you can't have elected people swearing allegiance or giving allegiance to any outside forces other than their electorate. I mean, that has to be the bottom line. How you enforce that, I don't know, but public exposing of people is important. And the thing about banks, that is absolutely right. Now, I think John McDonnell and Jeremy's National Investment Bank will overcome these problems. Because as it is, banks basically print money on the back of a promissory note. You know, if you promise to pay them something, they don't actually borrow it from somebody
no.
else. They just print it and give it to you. So they are printing money ad nauseum. Now, look, the idea that Britain is too poor to save the NHS or nationalise the railways is insane. I mean, after the last World War, Britain was on its knees. Yet we built council housing and built the NHS. That can be done now. Double, treble, quadruple.
I could talk to you all night, mate. Thanks for taking the time out too. I know I mean that. I'm not patronising.
People have to get out there. If you're not registered to vote, do it now. And don't hum and haw about X, Y, Z in the Labour Party's imperfect. Go there, do it now, register and vote on June the 8th and get all your votes and friends to vote on June the 8th.
Get
out from every friend you've got.
That was the final word. I'm a man of my word. Go to weatheraction.com. Piers, in a few weeks' time, after the election, let's talk more about climate change and some of these issues. I wish you the best, mate, sincerely.
Thank you.
And thanks again for coming on. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Piers Corbyn on the line to us from his home in London. Go to weatheraction.com. That's weatheraction.com. I think we were fair there. Can't be any fairer than that. Thanks so much to you for all your tweets on that. To see what other people are tweeting, go to Richie Allen Show on Twitter. In fact, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word in there. Simply do press enter, and when you press enter, you'll see what other people are tweeting. This is Cat Stevens. Michael Rivero joins me in a few minutes' time. Busy old show this. The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
I've lost everything to you. You say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Maybe I'm grieving, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there.
Cat Stevens and Wild World on the Richie Allen Show, 19 minutes past the hour. For Monday, April 24th, 2017, a hi to Faisal, who mentions nice little rant at the very beginning there, Richie. I think he was referring to St. George's Day, which was yesterday. I made the point on Sunday View that the many parades around the country would not be covered in any great way or in any great detail by national media. And as far as I know, I was right. Around about 6 p.m. yesterday, I had a look at the Sky and BBC feeds, and it was very little, if anything at all, about St. George's Day. I told you that when nationalism is portrayed in the media, it's portrayed negatively, generally in this country anyway. And I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Let's welcome our next guest. He's a great friend of ours, and he's jumped into the breach today at the last minute because I had another guest lined up who cried off at the last minute. I dialed up my old pal, Michael Rivero, in Oahu, in Hawaii. Check out whatreallyhappened.com. He's been on the cutting edge of alternative media research, production and broadcasting for many years now. Terrific journalist. Michael, aloha, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. It's not the first time you've bailed me out of the swamp, but you've done it again. Thanks for doing it, mate. Really good to have you on the programme. You'll have a thought on that, no doubt, on the national media in the UK refusing to cover the celebration of the Feast of St. George. We know why the national media doesn't want to cover nationalist events, don't we, Mike?
Well, yeah, because it's leading toward, they're opposed to populism, they're opposed to this rising sense of national identity, because the globalists kind of want to drop all of our borders and erase our regional cultural history. They're doing it here in the United States of America with the attacks on things like the Confederate flag and certain statues are being taken down now. And they're basically trying to erase our past in order to make it easier to control us in the future. And it really is an attack on our identity, and it's pernicious. It's widespread. They're trying to get us confused about who we really are and what we're supposed to be thinking, believing, even which restroom we're supposed to be using. And it's all an attack on our sense of identity.
And we have to stand up to it. I was thinking of you. I do a Sunday morning newspaper show where I look at the broadsheet and tabloid front pages, Mike. I was thinking of you yesterday. You'll probably be aware of this. If you're not, no foul. You're a few hours behind us. Oxford University have, I don't know if they've invented the term, but I'm going to be honest and say I never heard the term. Microaggression. Now, I've heard of passive aggression, but apparently, according to Oxford University, if you don't look somebody in the eye, Michael, or if you have the temerity to ask them, where do you originally come from? You're a racist. Did you know that?
Yeah, and actually, that's all over here. The term microaggression has actually been part of the liberal lexicon, if you will, for several years now, and it's this idea that you can be offensive to other people without intending to be, and therefore you should watch what you say and control your behavior. And again, it's cultural Marxism attempting to masquerade as politeness. But unfortunately, in this world, there are way too many people whose entire sense of self is based on always finding things to be offended by. And so it really is impossible to go through life without committing what they're calling a microaggression. And at this point, why even bother? It's an impossible task here. Somebody comes up to me and says, you've committed a microaggression. My usual reply is, well, here's a micro-apology.
Yeah. Or I've got two words for you, and the second one is off. I'm sure you can guess the first one.
Yes, I certainly can.
You know, the on that, because we laugh at it, you've got a terrific sense of humour, and I'm sure you and Claire have a good old giggle at it. But then, because of what we do, we stop and we think, well, how long before somebody suggests or moots the idea to legislate for it, Mike? Because then you're in trouble, right? Because I mentioned yesterday, I live in South Manchester. I don't get as many taxis as I used to do because I returned to driving a few months ago after a couple of years off the road. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't break any laws. I just wasn't driving. That's the truth. But I'm back on the road, not using so many taxis. When I use a taxi, it's usually a man or a woman of Asian ethnic background or African. I have to say, they are so clued up on what's really going on in the world. It's incredible. And I'm a chatterbox. Like any journalist, you want to hear what people think. You're like that as well. You talk to everybody. And I will invariably say, listen, where's your where do you come from? Where's your heritage? They'll always tell me. Sierra Leone Richie. Or Pakistan Richie. Or Afghanistan. Then we get into talking about what the West has done to those countries. And they usually know. And they're very good. I couldn't imagine, Michael, any of them thinking afterwards, that Irish bastard is a racist, wanting to know where I come from. How dare he? How long before somebody decides we need to legislate for this?
Well, it's probably going to be sometime in the near future. I mean, the New World Order is basically saying they need to control all human behavior and try and just trick us into literally imprisoning our own minds behind all of this political correctness nonsense. And a lot of the enforcement currently is through public shaming or shunning. But it's alarming to see how many universities are getting on board with this idea that we shouldn't say anything that might offend somebody. We shouldn't think anything that might offend somebody. But you cannot have freedom of speech and not offend anybody, because usually when you're speaking freely, there's somebody who doesn't like what you're saying, and they're going to say, I'm offended, I'm offended. Again, the proper response should be offended. I don't care.
Yeah.
But this idea that we should conduct our lives so as not to offend anybody, it's an impossible goal, because there are so many people who just look for reasons to be offended. I remember Berkeley Breathed did a wonderful Outland cartoon on that very subject. You know, I'm offended by your offensiveness, and just completely overboard. And it really is ridiculous, and it's an attack on freedom of speech and freedom of thought and freedom of behavior. And again, we're not talking about people who are intentionally going out to harm others. We're talking about normal people going about their lives being told that ordinary, natural behavior is somehow offensive to other people and that they should stop doing it. And again, it's to keep us all confused about what is proper behavior and etiquette. It's to undermine our sense of who we are, our identity.
You and I have used, you more successfully than me, used social media to disseminate information. And it's good that, you know, it's played a big part in introducing the thoughts and the research of people like you to people who wouldn't have gotten it. You know, as consummate a broadcaster as you are, my friend, no commercial radio station in 2017 or 2011 or 2012 is going to put Michael Rivero on the morning schedule because of the things that you talk about. And the internet was very good. You know, the internet was very good. But it's become an echo chamber, Michael, hasn't it? And it's fed this sort of nonsense. It's fed the narcissism of people who want to say whatever it is they want to say without being challenged. The first part of that equation is brilliant. You should be able to say whatever you want to say. No doubt about that. But you shouldn't fear it being challenged. You shouldn't become so narcissistic that you have a meltdown if somebody says, hey, Rivero, I don't agree with what you said about Bernie Sanders or whatever. So that's been a very negative. It's becoming a very negative thing. And it's being used as a tool, ironically, to shut debate down. What do you think?
Yeah, you're absolutely right here. And you need to understand there is already a war going on between the corporate media and the independent media. All of a sudden, over the last couple of months, there have been dozens and dozens of new websites created that do nothing but pump garbage news onto the internet in order to try and make the internet and the independent media look less trustworthy than the corporate media. Of course, it's going to be an uphill battle. We know that governments and corporations hire public relations firms to send people out on social media to attack them, to troll them. Apparently, Twitter just uncovered they've got a huge fake follower problem, where the fake followers are being used to spam things like porn ads onto the various Twitter feeds that they're supposed to be followers of. And again, in anything connected to computers, it's like there's no restraint for the scammers and the fraudsters and the propagandists. It's like open season on ordinary people on the internet.
No doubt about it. I want to turn to domestic politics. But before we do that, I spoke a good bit in the monologue today about the French first round and the fact that it's thrown up Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron. What was very interesting, I found today, was an establishment journalist who could ordinarily be trusted to toe the establishment line. A woman called Agnès Poirier speaks to the BBC a lot, used to speak to RT, not so much these days, for obvious reasons. The Russians are the devil, apparently, these days. But anyway, she was speaking to the BBC today and she said, both of these candidates belong to the establishment, she said. Both of them, regardless of what you might think about the policies of Le Pen or the policies of Macron, they're trying to paint themselves as outsiders, but in fact, both of them do. And I did a little bit of research. Well, I didn't have to do too much research. I know a lot about Le Pen and her opinions on Zionism. She's very, very pro-Zionist. She reiterated recently that the National Front is Zionistic and will always defend Israel's right to exist. Is it becoming more obvious now, Michael, to people in Europe, in countries like France and Spain and Greece and elsewhere, that, you know, don't get too excited by the, you know, apparent individualism and the apparent outsider policies of, whether it's, you know, Tsipras in Greece, whether it's the other crowd in Spain whose name I can never remember, or Le Pen, you're just getting another version of the establishment. What do you think?
Well, certainly that's a concern because of all the candidates who've campaigned saying one thing and done another. I think the French elections, though, are really about the immigration issue. And it is rather interesting that the so-called traditional mainstream parties did so poorly in this election. But looking at Donald Trump's complete reversal between what he campaigned on and what he's doing right now, it does seem to appear that democracy is just a vote between whether we're going to get hit with the right fist or the left fist, followed by a tax bill for the service. And Donald Trump is beginning to remind me of the weather here in Hawaii. If you don't like it, just wait 15 minutes and it's going to change.
Yeah.
And I can understand where Russia's foreign minister Lavrov is out there saying they're not really sure who is actually in charge in the U.S. government. Because we know the NSA's gone rogue, the CIA's gone rogue, the Pentagon appears to have gone rogue. They're basically just going on out and conducting war on their own choices and decisions. What's very alarming is Mike Pence is going on out making all these statements about Korea, and vice presidents traditionally tend to be behind the scenes, even when they're calling the shots, like Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. Dick Cheney was really running that White House, but he kept out of the limelight. Pence is out there acting like he's the president, and that's a very alarming situation. Donald Trump is still showing up for all the photo ops and everything. But it seems to me that the major decisions of the U.S. Government are being made without him by this little circle of neocons that has managed to infiltrate their way back into the White House.
Kennedy was the last president who was in charge of his administration, right?
Well, he tried to be. He wasn't totally. The CIA did set him up on that Bay of Pigs situation. But it does seem like the problems with the United States of America have little to do with the occupant of the White House and everything to do with the system as a whole.
Michael Rivera is on the line, folks. We've got Michael for another 10 minutes max. Busy man. He'll be on air later this morning. Go to whatreallyhappened.com. Pick up Michael's program if you haven't done before. I recommend it. It's terrific. Be different opinions expressed on his program than here. Not always. We agree on a lot, I think. But that's a good thing as well. Listen to people. Listen to different people. Don't be getting all your information from one source. Check out Michael there. What about then the... Where are we, Michael? We're Easter is gone. We've had this election in France. We'll know the outcome in 2 weeks' time. Bashar al-Assad went on television, spoke to Sputnik again a few days ago, reiterated, listen, there's no evidence whatsoever that we carried out any chemical attack. Why would we do it? We're in a great position. We wouldn't do it anyway, full stop. And he made the point that it's his belief that the United States have done everything, or has done everything it can, to block United Nations investigators going there, because if they did, they would see that it was a false flag. Where are we? Are we in a kind of a stalemate situation where there's, I don't know, it's almost like a Mexican standoff? Is that what's happening at the moment?
No, actually what's happening, first of all, the UN went in when the U.S. accused Assad of gassing his own people in 2013 and 2014. The UN went on in there and said, no, this was the U.S.-backed rebels attempting to frame Assad. Obviously, the U.S. does not want the UN inspectors back in there. Interestingly enough, the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons issued a statement last week saying that they thought it was Assad and it was sarin. Now they're backed off. The United Nations official position is because they're not being allowed to investigate the scene, they cannot say with any certainty what chemical was used. They're conceding that the gas release did accompany an airstrike, which goes along with the story we're getting out of Russia and Syria, that the coalition forces unintentionally bombed a rebel chemical depot, and that's what caused the release.
And that's what caused the release. No doubt about that. So he continues to maintain that, but the UK and US governments continue to maintain that it was him, and that, you know, he has to pay for that. There has to be a response to that. What sort of response are we going to see, do you think?
Well, we're talking about invasion. I mean, the US has been trying to get rid of Assad for going on 6 years now. It's part of a larger plan to take over the Middle East and start redrawing borders. And we know that the U.S. Has a very long history of using hoaxes to justify wars. And this latest chemical weapon attack appears to be, if not an accident, it's more the same, because Assad is absolutely correct. He was in an excellent position. Even the White House was saying they had to accept the political reality of Assad continuing in power. And so it makes absolutely no sense that Assad would carry out a chemical weapon attack on a target that had no military significance whatsoever, hitting civilians instead of the rebels. And, of course, conveniently, there were cameras all over the place. It just, you know, reeks of being a setup, a false flag. And the U.S. government uses these to start wars. Remember Saddam's nuclear weapons, which turned out not to exist. There are lies throughout history. Torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin that Johnson used to escalate Vietnam, they didn't exist. The Spanish mine in Havana Harbor that blew up the USS Maine that McKinley used to launch the Spanish-American War, that turned out not to exist. The poor, innocent Lusitania that Woodrow Wilson used to get us into World War I turned out it was, in fact, smuggling weapons to Great Britain in violation of the United States' declared neutrality at that time, and that made the ship a legitimate target of war. In fact, the German government actually took out ads in the New York newspapers warning people not to sail on the Lusitania, because they knew it was carrying weapons to Great Britain and it was a legitimate target of war.
We're jumping back and forward between different stories. Something I wanted to mention about the French election. Bizarre story, really. I put a post on Facebook today. Might have been a little bit cheeky, but I asked the question. I used the wrong wording because I know there's a very definitive definition, explanation of the term paedophile. But the would-be president of France, Emmanuel Macron, his personal story is quite bizarre, Michael. At a Jesuit school, he met up with his wife, Brigitte Macron. She was a teacher. He was 15 when they met. They're married now. I think there's 19, 20 years, maybe 22 years difference between them. And I asked the question today, is he the victim of a sexual offence? She was 39, he was 15. So there's a 24-year gap between them. They say that their relationship began when he was 18, that they waited. And that was around about the time that he acted in a theatre production that she put on. His parents didn't believe that. They were disgusted and sent him away. There's something very sinister about that, isn't there? Without being melodramatic or without being foolish or, you know, doing bad journalism, there's something very wrong with that, right?
Yeah, I would tend to think so. Most of accusations of pedophilia talk about male perpetrators, and the victims can be of either gender. But you do see the same behavior with older women. I actually witnessed some of that myself when I was working at Universal Studios, where one of the studio tutors, because children have to complete their education while they're working on the sets. So there's a little portable classroom, and there's a teacher who will teach the kids in accordance with California education requirements, unless they're needed on the set. And this teacher, who was in her 30s, was having a relationship with this very, very young movie star. And so I've seen it. Unfortunately, there is a bit of a gender bias, where in California, if it had been a male teacher and a female student, there would have been a prosecution. But there seems to be this nudge, nudge, wink, wink when it's a female perpetrator and a male victim. But it does go on, and it shows serious questions, not about the victim so much as the perpetrator. And, you know, and when you're at that age and you're a young male and your hormones are running crazy, any woman who wants to have a relationship with you is manna from heaven, so to speak.
You know, just on that, before we say goodbye for today, and thanks again for coming in at the last minute. I appreciate that, Mike. You know that. On that, some of our listeners, when I say our, I mean our listeners, your listeners, my listeners, many of whom cross over between our programs, they will say, Richie, maybe you and Mike need to, you know, delve a bit deeper into that. Maybe these guys are chosen way back when. The system plays a long game. And a lot of that has been tweeted around today and put out there on social media. Some of it is irresponsible, but some of it is well meant. People saying, you know, we know that trauma-based mind control is a reality. And they wonder about guys like Macron and his encounter with this woman at a Jesuit school. And they wonder if that was maybe by design. What do you think, Mike?
I tend not to think so. First of all, we don't know to what extent, if any, Macron felt traumatized by this relationship.
Yeah.
It certainly seems to me like he was enjoying himself. Again, with that raging hormones comment. But as far as politicians in general, they're recruited at an early age. And they're brought up through the ranks to make sure that they're going to do what they're told to do when the time comes. And you look back at the history of somebody like Barack Obama, where he was basically groomed from a very young age to have a role in the political system. Now, they don't go out to some 18-year-old and say, you're going to be the president someday. They're just cultivating assets and resources. And then as they move on, they say, OK, we think this person can move here. That person can move there. But there's absolutely no question that certainly CIA keeps an eye on the up-and-comers. If they look like they're going to play ball, they'll be supported. And if they look too independent-minded, then obviously they'll be disposed of.
Simple
politically, socially.
Absolutely. Right, one final question then, Mike. Because you mentioned the CIA handling, what do we know about the reports that Kim Jong-un is a CIA asset, or was?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. The CIA is all over the world. We know that a lot of people, we've been told, are our enemies, turn out to be CIA assets. That's certainly been true with, for example, Osama bin Laden, whose family was, you know, still gets these huge U.S. military contracts in the Mideast. His older brother was a business partner with George W. Bush in a company called Arbusto Energy. They're all buddy buddies. And when he was young, Osama was your basically rich playboy kid. Then all of a sudden, he gets turned into this fanatical figurehead representing the great Satan. It's known that he was with CIA. His code name at CIA was Tim Osman. So, yeah,
right.
This stuff does happen all the time.
Mind-boggling, Michael. It's mind-boggling. It's such a minefield. Listen, thanks again for coming on. WhatReallyHappened.com is Michael's website. Check out the What Really Happened radio show. All the links are on the website there. Always a pleasure, mate. Have a great rest of your day there.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers, Mike. Bye for now. The great Michael Rivero on the line to us there from Oahu in Hawaii. As I said, check out whatreallyhappened.com. Can't recommend it highly enough. We're going to move on swiftly. Before we do that, though, we've got some music to take. When I come back, more of your tweets. Yeah, more of your tweets. Let's do that. What time is it? 16 and a half minutes to the top of the hour for Monday, the 24th of April, 2017. I'm Richie Allen. This is Brian Ferry and Roxy Music. Love this song. I could feel at the time there was no way knowing for the reason in the line. Who can say when it's growing as free as the wind? Hopefully learning why the sea. I've got great admiration for Piers Corbyn, huge admiration in fact. Piers is well aware of some of the things I've said about some of the things that I believe Jeremy Corbyn should and could have done and some of the criticisms I've levelled at him. But he's mature enough, I think, to know that none of those criticisms were ever personal. They couldn't be personal because I never met Jeremy Corbyn. And I've always tempered everything I've ever said about Jeremy Corbyn by comparing and contrasting the backbench Jeremy Corbyn and the things he said over the years about Northern Ireland, about Gaza, about Palestine, about the crimes of the Israeli governments, globalism, his anti-European Union stance. I've always compared and contrasted that with the Jeremy Corbyn we see today. And I'm always fair, me. There are times when I'm a bit sharp, I think, and I can be a bit... I'm typical, I suppose, of if you can quantify an entire country of people, like the Irish, we can be defensive at times, and I suppose I'm as guilty as anybody else. I've got a very thick skin, me. The two are not mutually exclusive. I have a thick skin, but I also can be defensive at times. I can get irritated at times, but... I've always said that, you know, Jeremy Corbyn kind of proved for me what I've been saying for about 10, 12 years, that you cannot, there isn't a man or a woman who's going to deliver the populace, the electorate, the people from the tyranny, because the system is set up to prevent it. You know, any time a man or a woman gets near the system, the system has within it, if everything is an illusion, if everything is a computer game, a computer simulation anyway, the system has a virus. David described this when he was on with me a year or so ago. David described it as entrainment, when people are vibrated into line. I thought it was a brilliant way of describing it. Entrainment is when you have three violins or three guitars and you pluck two of them to the C note. The third one will begin to vibrate a C to come into line with the other two instruments. And that's absolutely right. And David said that's what the system does to any well-meaning man or woman. It entrains them. And that might explain why, I mean, you heard Piers Corbyn clearly say at the end of that, that my three policy issues, a would-be president, man or woman, to stand there and say, we create the terror groups, we fund them and arm them to destroy, to maim, to murder, to kill, to cripple. We do that for several reasons. One, for chaos, blood sacrifice. Two, to play into the depopulation agendas. Three, for the assets of those countries. Four, replace the democratically elected, not always democratically elected, but to replace the president or the prime minister with someone we choose to put in there. Money creation and Zionism. Now, no man or woman in any mainstream political party is ever going to take on those issues. Never has done, never will. Some of you are screaming at your mobile phones or your tablets or your computers. Ah, George, Richie, George. He did, but George Galloway didn't stay in the Labour Party. George Galloway became an outsider. He formed a reality, he didn't. He formed a respect party. And then George was pretty much on his own. Where to his credit, and I don't support any politician, never will, but to his credit, he spoke about these issues, globalisation, spoke about Israel a lot, Palestine, murder. So that's why I maintain the stance that I maintain. I sometimes get a bit pissed off when I see people who I've come to know through this programme, when I see them getting excited about Marine Le Pen. And I think, I'm going to use a bad word now because I can't phrase it any better. Maybe that's to my eternal discredit. But they'll never fucking learn. They'll never learn. The same suckers who... Suckers is probably unfair, isn't it? Suckers is probably unfair. Shouldn't be calling people names. I don't mean suckers in a very negative sense. But they were suckered into supporting Donald Trump. The same people were suckered in different countries into supporting Alexis Tsipras and Herman Munster. And, you know, years gone by, Obama. Michael would have admitted, Michael Rivero, that he would have been an Obama supporter at the beginning. Jim Fetzer would have admitted, and he did admit on this programme before, he would have been an Obama supporter. This guy's different. He's different. Look at it. There's a different cut of his jib. He's saying different things. He's definitely not one of them. They're all one of them, whether they want to be or not, whether consciously or subconsciously. Jeremy Corbyn's not a bad bloke. I doubt he is. Never met him. Would like to put these points to him. He was invited on in the past and his handlers politely came back and said no, he was only going to do national media. fair enough. That is their right. And I appreciated at least that they responded to me. Unlike Damien Collins, the Tory guy heading up the fake news inquiry, no manners, no reply. Unlike the Conservatives, the many of them that I've emailed to ask to come on, no manners, no reply. They got back and said, not for us, we're going to do national media. Fair enough. Fair enough, that's your absolute right. Don't believe he's a bad guy. Don't believe he ever set out to do the bidding of the establishment, of the system. But that's what he does now. By virtue of the fact that he won't talk about the things that Piers and I talked about. In the spotlight that's limited, maybe. Maybe it's not. Maybe May will have a reduced majority. Maybe she won't have a majority. Maybe Labour will do a deal with the Lib Dems. I have no idea. But it doesn't matter. Nothing will ever change through the ballot box. Mark Twain said it. Voltaire said something along the lines of that. He certainly talked about history being written by lawyers, by the those who conquer. I'm rambling a little bit now, but you get where I'm going with this. So that's it. I really enjoy talking to Piers, and I look forward to him coming back on the programme again to talk about issues of the environment. I think he's a really decent bloke, and I think he did well in coming on, knowing full well what he was going to get, that I was going to push him on these points, on Zionism, on Ken Livingstone, and those other issues. That's just about it for the programme, by the way. Thank you so much to Piers. Follow Piers on Twitter. It's @Piers_Corbyn. @Piers_Corbyn. Michael Rivera is on Twitter as well, @WRH_radio. I think, if I'm wrong, I'll retweet the right one. Thanks to Simon Stewart for putting the interviews on YouTube, as usual, and to Aaron, to everybody at davidicke.com. Stay with our broadcast partners. Check out davidicke.com/headlines, alternatecurrentradio.com, and fabradiointernational.com. Please stay in touch with our broadcast partners. They are well worth the effort, believe you me. So still lining up things for tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday. Paul Craig Roberts is going to parachute back into the programme one of the days, I think maybe Wednesday. Spoke with Paul a bit earlier on. He wants to come on. Got some really interesting things to say. Paul will be on. And I'm lining up... Why is my mind gone blank there now? The excellent Dr. Catherine Horton, who came on this programme, the Oxford-educated PhD, who came on this programme to talk about mind control exclusively a few months ago. She's back on the programme real soon as well. Catherine will join me. So lots going on with the show. Thanks so much to you for listening and tweeting during it. It wouldn't be the same without you. Please support it. Go to paypal.me/RichieAllen. I'm going to leave you with some Radiohead and a song called Creep. Feel like a creep sometimes. Some of the things we say and do. This is a terrific song, this. Look after yourselves and one another. I'll see you tomorrow, Tuesday at 7 p.m. BST. Bye for now. Bye now. When you were here before, couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. Float like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so fucking special.